welcome to the next installment of the SUS News Podcast Series, where we interview newsmakers and discuss the news and applications relevant to the global unmanned technologies community. I'm your program host, Patrick Egan, and as we always do at this time, we say a big, warm Texas welcome to our co-host, Mr. Gene Robinson.
Well, you know, warm would be the key word today because we have an extreme lack of it for some reason. I don't know what the heck is going on, but we have another little ice-mageddon going on here. So, hello, everyone out there, and I'm going to try to stay warm while we go through this whole process of talking about drone stuff.
Well, you know, it's not like Punxsutawney Phil didn't, you know, come through and see his shadow. I mean, he said there was going to be six more weeks of winter. Don't tell me you're not watching the groundhog feed.
I thought he died, didn't he?
There are rumors that he dropped it. But, you know, it could have been the shadow after party. You know, some of these celebrities, you know, they overindulge, they party down, and, you know, these things happen. So I don't know. I'm going to have to check into that. We'll have to read the TMZ page and see what happened later to Punxsutawney Phil.
Confirm that rumor.
Exactly. I don't even want to go down that road, but there's a whole comedy sketch right there. But anyway, I love Punxsutawney Phil. And I love that movie, Groundhog Day. Remember that with Bill Murray?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's got the groundhog driving the truck. That was good stuff. And drone-related news, there's did you see the Washington Post article?
I did. There's been some discussion about that, yeah.
All right.
Again, Patrick, same thing that you were discussing, what, how many years ago?
The thing is it's funny as people are like, well, you know, you're anti-Chinese or what. I'm like, oh, no, hold the phone. I'm not anti-Chinese at all. This week's hangout with Gary and the Commonwealth Club, as I like to call it, because everybody, it's like the whole... I did talk about that and saying that really, you know, possibly some of the Western governments were, you know, kind of resting on their laurels from the 50s and 60s, and it's really not a bad idea that they have, that the government, you know, the government realizes that there's a basket of technologies that you've got to be, top of the game on if you want to be a world power, you know, and drones is one of them. AI, supercomputing, facial recognition, yada, yada, yada. And the government investing in that, I don't think it's a bad idea. The only time I see it as kind of a bad idea is when you're people sitting over here, you know, twiddling your thumbs thinking that the rest of the world's like you, you know? So that's the only issues that I have with it. I don't, and the other thing is it's been something, and I think we've talked about it over the years, is people like, I'm going to start a drone company and I'm going to get, you know, $40 million of investment and I'm going to compete with DJI. What do you think of that notion, Gene?
It's the old joke that we always, you know, kind of throw out there is, you know, how to make a small fortune in the drone industry. And that start out with a large fortune, you know. So, we've been kind of held up a little bit and we're in severe catch-up mode right now. And, you know, as you say, the Chinese have done a really, really, really good job of listening to their user base and giving them what they want. Whole thing, the developmental process has been such that, you know, the selfie drones kind of drove it. The photography and the pretty picture drones kind of drove it for the longest time. And now, really, they're getting down to brass tacks, and we're getting industry involved. So
you got to
credit them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And the other thing is, it's kind of funny, too. I guess, you know, reading comprehension is not the West's big thing. But, you know, it's not like, I mean, you know, to China 2025, you know, Belt and Road. So, I don't know. I just think, resting on the laurels, you know, people thinking that we're, the West is just technologically superior and never happened in all our time. So anyway, that's another mess for another time. I just think it's interesting that, you know, until Washington Post does a story, it's not reality, even though we did the same deal at SUS News probably 3 years ago. But hey, whatever. And then the only other one I want to talk about, you know, I did want to do a whole show and talk about Part 103. So, you know, you saw, you've seen they put up a TFR over, I mean, almost all of L.A. for the Super Bowl, which, you know, to me is kind of like, whoa, you know, well, I mean, what about, you know, television and movie production and, you know, whatever else. And usually that TFR is up for an extended period of time, blah, blah, blah. And the question I tweeted back to the FAA is, can I fly my ultralight in the TFR? Because it's really not a vehicle. It's not an aircraft. It's a vehicle. So I'm kind of curious on that. I'm going to have to go through there and read that.
So but you haven't gotten an answer yet as to whether you can fly your ultralight?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, I don't have to have any aeronautical knowledge. I got to buy one. I'm going to have to buy an ultralight so I have, like, the Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel 2. That way I have, like,
you know, example. They say you don't want to fly any higher than you're afraid to fall in one of those things, so it could be interesting.
Well, I'm not really prepared to fall from any height. Or grace. I don't want to get kicked off my own show for a couple of weeks. Anyway, so that was all I got. Did you have anything to add to the news portion, Gene?
I've been pretty much head down on the whole teaching thing. You know, that kind of started with that, with the community college. And I'm actually now having to learn more about Part 137.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's something that our guest, and, you know, we can talk about that some more later on, but you know, I never thought I'd be doing that, but, you know, here I am.
Well, so, you know, you can do 137 on the Part 103 aircraft or vehicle, but you do have to have the license, which I would think would be more dangerous than doing it with drones. So interesting, yeah. There's a lot of nuances there, and you know, I'm kind of excited today because I like food, and I think we're going to learn something or things about food. So without further ado, let's bring on our guest, Mr. Dudley Steffens, Director of Strategy at Randazzo Inc. You there, Dudley?
I am here, and it's Dudley Steffens at Randazzo Incorporated.
Randazzo. Okay, I got it wrong. Sorry. How's
it
going?
it's going well. Randazzo, just in case it comes up, is a Greek word to sprinkle. And as we kind of get into what our company does, you'll understand why that is applicable and an appropriate name for us.
All right. Well, I was kind of curious as where it came from, and I'm glad that you enlightened us on that one, because it is an interesting name. So, as we usually do, we ask our guests to give us a brief bio, you know, what you've been up to for a little while, and how you came to work with Unmanned Aircraft Systems.
Sure. So, I grew up on a farm in the Mississippi Delta, and primarily focused on cotton at the time. I've spent a fair amount of my life in commodity trading, pretty much globally, working on several continents, sourcing grain and oil seeds for the food and feed markets. I have also been a consultant for almost 20 years now in the crop input industry, primarily crop protection and seeds, corn and soybeans. And then dealing with the major chemical companies that are out there. Along the lines, I got involved in agricultural technology investment and worked with, now this is my third ag tech startup. And really trying to bring technology, which other than some basic equipment changes, really hasn't existed at the farm gate for the better part of the history of farming, right? Since John Deere's plow. And we've seen an influx of that that technology from data gathering and data just understanding of data on a day-to-day basis to enhance the markets and what happens at the farm level. And that has led me to Rantizo as part of my consulting and investments and whatnot. And that's where I am.
Interesting. Well, you know, there's as always, you know, usually we try to book professionals on this show. And even in your bio, you know, there's a lot there. And, you know, you're talking about farm inputs, and a lot of folks are probably like, what is he talking about? But, you know, this is one of the things of being a advocate of the unmanned aircraft systems technology. You know, one thing I already saw early on, I know Gene, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but Gene had some experience with the farm drone concept early on. And I also, you know, I tried to do a thing with Brown University, and I had this concept for these, you know, send this technology to the developing world to, you know, look at maladies with the big three, which we'll get into in a moment. And I had this malady book idea where you could look at the crop, and there would be a malady, and then an inset of like the corn weevil or whatever, you know, did this thing. So I've been on board with this for a long time. But I don't know that people know what farm inputs are, but maybe you could give us a brief of what that is and what that means to the, I guess, the crop and also the value and whatnot.
Sure. In the basic sense, it's anything that goes into the ground or over the ground. I guess starting initially with fertilizer. So there's multiple types of fertilizer. The most common in North America is nitrogen, right? So nitrogen-based fertilizers that help the crop grow. Then after that is the seed. So there's a huge seed industry and developing seeds. I know, and I don't think we want to go on a tangent of genetically modified or gene-edited seeds. That's five podcasts down the road. But that is, you know, how we feed the world is with new advancements in genetic breeding of seeds. Primarily corn, soybeans are the main drivers in the U.S., wheat and rice in other parts of the world, along with all your other fruits and vegetables. And then the biggest portion, or the biggest spend, if you will, is really around what we call crop protection and nutrients, and that is your fungicides, which, you know, protect plant health. The insecticides, which, as the name says, takes care of additional pests, and then herbicides, which is really cleaning up the crops in the field, you know, getting rid of noxious weeds and the like. And that is the main challenge, is really taking those, we'll call it three or four components, and managing that cost on an annual basis for most crops. And sometimes it's two or three times annually, right? And where do we come in with the unmanned systems and the drone applications? That's where we fit in. And I think one of the things you touched base on there, Patrick, with your malady, is that we've had imagery drones out there for quite some time now, and they're being used at the farm level to spot those maladies in the field, whether it's an insect infestation or a patch of, you know, Johnson grass or cuckleburrs or Palmer amaranth is a big buzzword because it is somewhat herbicide resistant, right? So finding those spots in the field and then figuring out how to treat those. Well, in the common practices of today, if you have an infestation of some kind of a malady, you're just going to spray the entire field. And that is just the mentality of the farmer. It wasn't always that way. That shifted in 95, 96. When we introduced Roundup Ready, you know, GMOs, part of that, you had a lot of spot sprays and farmers really trying to control their input cost from a chemical application. But now we have some technology, and that's hopefully what we'll talk about, is ways of reducing the expenditure, the use of chemicals, the use of water on crops with the Rantisa system.
Well, that's I was definitely hoping we come downstream to that for sure, because that was one of the things that I liked, you know, using. And I don't know if you know the XAG company's products. Actually, I've been watching them, and I've seen their demonstration years ago. They had a guy running around here in Northern California, and I was impressed. But I was more impressed with, you know, I went to China, watched their presentation, and it's kind of this holistic, you know, sensors in the ground, you know, imagery drones, application drones, all the rest of the stuff, and analyzing all the data and everything else. I kind of saw the promise early on is to say, hey, you know, and especially for like organic farmers, you know, they're like, oh man, I got to walk these fields all the time. If you were able to get the imagery from the drone at a low cost and you can catch these maladies early, as you were saying, more of a spot spraying deal. Now, what's the advantage of that? You kind of alluded to that. There's a financial advantage, you know, that I don't have to outlay the money for the farm inputs, but also it makes you a better upstream neighbor because you're not putting these nitrogen-based or more than you need fertilizers, whatever, or chemicals or whatever that are getting into the watershed, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, much like the lotus flower, the technology keeps giving and giving. And I mean, that's, is that what you're seeing in today's, you know, let's say ag world?
Yeah. I mean, I think that is our main adoption driver. So where farmers and ag retailers have adopted that is they understand that that's where the industry is going, and whether they get on board now or they get on board later, that is where it's going. The outside pressures are saying you have to use less chemicals, you have to use less fertilizer, and make the most of the fewest, right? And why treat a field 100% of the field when only 3 or 4% of the field needs treatment? So
exactly. And that's so you know we're starting to, I know that's another thing too, you know, there was a early on, and Gene probably remembers this, farm drones. You know, people were proselytizing the old farm drone thing, and I'm like, well, what's the farm drones? Okay, sounds good. What does that mean? So, you know, people were like, well, we're going to give the farmer data. He's going to get some data. And you kind of alluded to this. There's been a, let's say, an evolution since the John Deere plow. I mean, I know the new, let's say, or I shouldn't say the new, but the modern farmer is awash in data. True?
That, absolutely. And understanding which data is really going to make sense to improve his farm and his bottom line is the key. He's got data coming at him from all different angles, and all, you know, his share of wallet to buy that data about himself is relatively thin, right? So there's only so much money that can go around to access that data. And ultimately, he wants to understand what data is going to help him. And if you're taking, let's look at satellite imagery, is that field really going to change year over year? No. There are going to be some spots that might change, but for the most part, the dirt's going to be the same as it was 20 years ago, right? So, you know, as far as we're concerned, and this is why drone imagery really makes sense for us and tying into drone imagery. We are not a drone imagery company. We partner with companies that do drone imagery and companies that buy those services. And it's really to attack the issues in the field that can be seen from a drone.
So, you know, and you know, 45 minutes goes quick, but, I did want to talk about, you know, modern farming. I think a lot of people that were in the Silicon Valley farm-driven mindset saw the farmer at some, you know, you see those farm or those signs along the road with the farmer on the tractor with the, you know, wheat stalk hanging out of his mouth, or, you know, there's tractors crossing the road or whatever, and it's like, no, that, you know, that was the 50s. The modern farmer is somebody who's totally different, and like you said, there's only so many dollars to spread around. There's all of this data. How do you coalesce all of that into something that's meaningful? You know, who's going to buy this, at what price point and things like that. So let's, you know, let's give us maybe a lay of the land of what modern farming looks like. I mean, is it, I know that there's a lot of like corporate farming, and then there's the mom and pops or family farms, you know, what's going on there?
Yeah, the lay of the land is it's still majority family farm, and they've just gotten bigger and consolidated. They're practically corporations themselves. But when I think of corporate farming, I'm thinking of something like the wonderful company that owns all of this pomegranate orchards, right, and farms.
Don't get us started
with
the wonderful company.
Yeah, of course. But, you know, as far as the farms that we see on the side of the road, typically it's a relatively large farm. And I think the average farm, what we call a large farm, is above 3,600 acres, right? And that farm typically has a data component, a GPS component, right? So all the fields are going to be mapped. All of the rows are going to be planted on RTK centers. And any data that is collected across the field. So every time the tractor go, or the, you know, if it's planting, if it's spraying, if it's harvesting, all of that data is being collected. So you know what's going into the crop and also what's coming out of the crop, and then you can understand your ROI better. That is the basis, and that is what the majority of farmers are doing in America. And some more granular, some a little less granular, but ultimately that is the landscape of the farm right now. And so for Rantizo, how do we play in that space is that we're an application services company. So if you want to think of us as a commercial application company that you hire out to come spray your crop, because not all farmers have, you know, ground spray rigs, and not all farmers have access to an airplane to crop dust their fields, right? Mm-hmm. We're just another piece of that puzzle. We're just more on the precision ag of that puzzle than the others may be.
All right.
Okay, and so if you hire one of those entities out, you want to be able to capture that trip across the field, and that's where the data play comes in.
Hmm. Well, and then, you know, the next one I want to get into, because I do want an overview of, you know, like the business model, like you said, okay, so you're,
sure,
you're an applications,
sure,
you know, company. So, you know, another one, my old Farm Drones concept is, here I am in Corn Bluff, Iowa. It's a fictitious town. I don't think there's a real Corn Bluff, but you know, you're out there and you talked about the family farms and how big it is, right? So I also believe, yeah, this was one of Tad McGeer's concepts, that aircraft make money when they're in the air, right? So I had always been kind of a proponent of, for this to work, you know, in an industrial application, you're going to need to be able to fly beyond visual line of sight. And you're also, I think you could do a risk analysis on that. You know, again, Corn Bluff is 50 miles from the nearest town and airport and all the rest of this. And I think you can, let's say, suss out the safety risk analysis and say, hey, this is doable with this aircraft that has this range that can do that, yada, yada, yada. Where are we now with you know, the regulatory side of this? And, you know, maybe I'm all wet, maybe my concepts are you know, not correct, and maybe you can do all of this in visual line of sight. Where are we at today?
Yeah, right now we're a far cry from there, okay? And the main reason is we're just at the infancy of it. I mean, spray drones in the U.S. have only been around a couple of years, right? Maybe three at the most. We're a four-year-old company, and we've been actively spraying about 3 years under our FAA Part 137, right? And we have great communication with FAA, but as far as, you know, until we have enough birds in the air and enough data to support anything that would trend towards a beyond visual line of sight, I just don't see that happening, you know, within the near term. But, it, you know, I think everybody is under the agreement and the belief that at some point in the future we will be there, okay? We're just such a new technology and in a regulated industry and on multiple fronts, because it's not just the FAA. The EPA is involved and numerous other entities, right? So as we move forward and track and share information with those entities about what we're doing, we're going to get buy-in towards that beyond visual line of sight.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to be the fly in the ointment or whatever, but I mean, you know, the Japanese have been using this technology since the late 80s, and you know, with the RMAX and some other let's say variations and whatnot, there's tens of thousands of pilots in Japan. And you know, in the early days, I did that was to the FAA, hey, look, you know, these guys got more data than you could shake a stick at, you know, and it's working, you know. So, I guess I'm frustrated at the pace. I've been at this for like 20 years, so it's a little frustrating. But you're able to make it work inside of the constraints of the 107, 137. I mean, I want to get into this. I want to get into this farm drone, spray drone industry. You mentioned some of the other federal agencies. It must be fun. That's all I can say is it must be fun. So tell us a little bit about what that's like.
Yeah. So what we do and how we work is relatively simple. So Ranzizo, we are a turnkey drone solution, and we sell primarily to ag retailers. So these are the ones that would sell the crop inputs to farmers, right? And in many cases, mm-hmm. they're involved in precision ag, and they have their own commercial application services, probably a ground rig, sometimes a crop duster as well. And we pitch this as a piece of the puzzle, right? So you want your mm-hmm. ground rigs and you want your aerial focused on large acreage. Some of the bigger fields that you're thinking about, and focus the drone as it currently sits on the smaller acres, the triangles, the awkward acres, the 5, the 10, the 20, the 40-acre fields, and leave your 100-acre fields to a much bigger implement, if you will. But so what we do is we sell to them. We sell them it's the DJI Agris T30. That is what we sell. Ag retailers, and then along with that, we provide services and insurance and support and training, which we're very focused on training. And you know, we actually have a partnership with Gene here on how some of that training is done in the winter months. But the training and support are really the key aspects of Rantizo and what differentiates us from other companies that happen to be selling agricultural spray drones. And so what we do is we have a partnership or an agreement or a contractor relationship with those ag retailers to help operate under our 137 as a single entity, because we have the 137, and this is a tricky, waiver part to get within the FAA. And because of that, we monitor it very closely. We have a digital app that allows tracking of each flight and what you're spraying and when and the weather and everything else, we'll just call it a flight log, that is necessary for reporting. And that is critical for us to be successful, not just Rantizo, but agricultural spray drones in general. And there's a lot of cowboys out there that are buying spray drones that are not following this. And that, you know, that poses a huge challenge for us, but because all it takes is one bad fly in the ointment, right? So,
yeah,
we are trying to keep everything as legal and to, track to a T and provide that information, so then we can help the FAA get to writing that beyond visual line of sight. And we have taken upon ourselves to be the entity to do that, meanwhile growing as many acres as possible under spray or under drone spray, if you will, and really driving adoption at the farm level. So we do market to farmers, even though we don't sell to farmers, because we want them to understand that spraying or spot spraying or site-specific applications are more beneficial for their crop, more beneficial for their farm overhead, and that's what we do at Rantizo.
It's the right tool for the job type of thing. And that makes sense, the odd angles and not every farm is a rectangle or square or roads go through and, all kinds of different things, or there may be power units, whatever. But, there are a few things I want to talk about in that. So, the cowboy thing is kind of funny. Not only... I think that there were some people that went out there with the farm drones thing and I mean, I kind of laughed at that because, you know, I grew up in that, let's say, rural agricultural type area, you know, and my dad did a lot of work for farmers. And these guys, the old timers, man, could pick up a handful of dirt, sift through it, tell you what it needed, what would grow there, blah, blah, blah. And you had people that knew nothing about, and I'm not an expert on farming or whatever besides the eating the end product, but, you know, I'm going to go out and tell the farmer, what services, I'm going to give him pictures. You know, okay, great. You know, there's a value in that, but it's a limited value. You know, is there any analysis? What's the data? I mean, what's the data set you're giving out? So it, you know, you sound like you know about agriculture. So, I'm going to assume that your pilots, you know, and I want to get into the training. So just even besides the flying training, you know, I mean, are you training these people to understand the crops they're doing applications on? You know, how does that work? What's going on there?
Yeah, so the majority of our pilots are coming from the ag retail channel. So if it's a company like a Nutrien that's out there, which is the largest crop input provider in the world, if they send us someone to become a pilot, they already know the crops that their customers have, right? And they have a very good relationship with their agronomist, or maybe they are an agronomist. And they're going to add this as, you know, just another, product line or whatever services they do. So they're pretty knowledgeable of the industry and what they're doing. And then what we do is make sure they get the 107. And then in our training, other than just learning how to fly and apply with the spray drone, we're making them understand droplet size, how to adjust for wind, all of the things that come along with applying what the FAA calls economic poisons, right? So that's what we do. And so when they walk away, they are confident that they can go out and fly.
Yeah, well, and I think that's a big thing. And go ahead, Gene.
Well, one of the things that, as you guys were talking, that I'd like to throw in there when we start talking about BB loss and that sort of thing, I have been kind of embedded with their guys. Juan Cantu is here, and Adam, they're pilots that do a lot of the training and setup. And you know me, as a science geek and a data geek for my past life, I mean, this stuff is right up my alley. So I've been kind of embedded with them there at the Public Safety Training Center there for Austin Community College for the last couple of times they've been here. And from a practical standpoint, they put a lot of thought into it because their trailer, you know, has a flying platform on the roof that has rails that, you know, pop up for OSHA purposes so you don't fall off the trailer, but it gets you above that, you know, 7 foot of corn. So you can see well down line as your drone is flying, and you know, you could knock off a section with that bird no problem from one spot because you could see all the way down to be able to keep your eyes on it. And the 30 is a big bird. It is a very big bird. And
that is one thing I wanted to talk about is a little bit more about the hardware. And you know, Gene, you're saying it's a big bird. And I'm sure, you know, let's see, maybe we could talk about the size of that and then talk about, you know, some of the economics as far as like training for the size, area of, you know, that you could cover, things like that. Maybe, I don't know who wants to break that down, but I'm interested.
Sure. Sure. And I would like to go back that, you know, up until the very first part of last November, we were using the DJI Agris MG1P. And we had a waiver to modify it from DJI, and we put a boom on it so we could spray a 20-foot swath with. But that's a 10-liter tank. It was refilling, every minute and a half, and swapping out batteries every 3 minutes or so, and spending a lot of ground time. And even though it was doing about 8 acres to the hour, it just wasn't super efficient. Now, we had a swarming capability or waiver from the FAA on that, so we could swarm up to 3 at once and, you know, increase that productivity. But it was essentially, a way to get into the market and really learn about the industry. And then when the T30 came out, and we were the very first company in the U.S. to get that waiver to fly the T30, we've looked at, and Gene can attest, they've been doing all the trials down there. Now, even though DGI will say, you know, it's 40 acres to the hour, it's really right around 17.9, 18 acres to the hour, spraying a 3 gallon to the acre rate, flying, you know, 7 foot above the canopy, will give you a 20-foot swath width. It is a beast. It'll take about 9 minutes to, 7 to 9 minutes to empty the payload. The batteries take around 9 minutes to charge. It is super efficient. And I foresee that this is just like super, like we were driving a Ford Pinto and, you know, now we're at a Mustang and who knows what's going to come down the line. Right. And that's really where we are.
So how many liters does this, this new bird hold?
Yeah. The new bird is a 30 liter.
Okay. Well, I was
so three times size, yeah.
Make an ass out of myself again.
Unlike some of the other, like you, the XG, you know, their numbers don't necessarily correlate with what the tank size is. But luckily, on the DJI right. Agrostrones, they did. Yeah.
And so, you know, we're getting and like you said, the Pinto, and we don't want to deride such an awesome car, you know, has lithium capabilities, right? So now we're moving into the Mustang, and hopefully, we're going to get the GT here coming soon. But We're at a point now or a size or scale with the 30 that this is making sense for you, like to bring. I mean, this is another thing, you know, there's a lot of, and I don't want to deride the Best Buy flyer, but, you know, so many people run out and some of the cowboys and cowgirls run out and buy, go down to Best Buy and plunk down their $1,000 or $1,500 and, you know, within a month or what, I'm a drone expert and I'm going to do all of this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And there's relatively low overhead with driving in your car and flying the Phantom or whatever. And I think that as you scale this up, people are like, I'm going to make, you know, millions in drones or whatever. So the reality is, you know, you have, I don't know what your crew is that you send out or whatever, but, you know, Gene's alluding to a trailer that has OSHA considerations. And, you know, you're talking about the EPA and the FAA and all the rest of these people. I'm starting to, you know, there's my mental, you know, desk calculator with tape is going off. And I'm starting to think about the cost of all this. And I'm like, all right. So, you know, and again, it's economy of scale. So with the 30, is this starting to make sense? Is it, you know, time-wise, efficiency, you know, can, and you don't have to give us the secret sauce. I don't want you to give it away. But
yeah, no, that's fine. And it really comes down to most farmers, whatever they buy, if they're buying an input or an application service, they're looking on a per acre rate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in some areas of the U.S., the rate's different than other areas. So let's take, you know, Iowa, for instance. If you're buying a crop duster or you're hiring out a crop duster to spray your chemicals, you know, it's somewhere between $12 and $15 an acre. Whereas in the Mississippi Delta, where I'm from, that's probably $6 or $7 an acre for applying exactly the same thing over the exact same type of crop, right? And that's just the way that things are. A lot more crop dusters in the South than they are in the North. Well, that goes back to cotton and rice and just different, you know, old style makeup of the crop mix, but that's kind of what we're playing with here. And so, whereas the MG1P system may have been, you know, $20-$30 or so an acre, now with this T series, you're looking to be a little bit more comparable, at least with the northern prices. And that tells you that hey, this could be a fit, and that's where we're looking at. And then from a an investment standpoint, if I am an ag retailer and I'm spending $450,000, $500,000 a year on a ground rig to spray, $50,000, $100,000 investment for a T-Series trailer, blah, blah, blah. It's really nothing, right? And then there's the component of, well, we've got new drones coming every year. One of the things that Rantizo is working on is an upgrade program, kind of like your cell phone, right? And so, yeah, we know a T-40 exists. They're using it in China right now. When will that be available, and when it's available, are we going to be able to roll it out quite quickly? Because the technology in the drone space, and you know this well, Patrick, is moving far more rapidly than, say, even the EV space for, you know, cars and trucks in the U.S.
Yes. I know. And, you know, again, I kind of alluded to a little bit of my frustration early on. You know, we need the new technology. I mean, we have to put the long pants on, as I like to say. You know, we've got 8 billion brothers and sisters and whatever on the planet. And as the population grows, you know, we got to figure out how to, you know, food security, right? So everything you're talking about plays into what really has to happen, and we're going to have to get on board and make it happen, you know, and also with the farm inputs, the water security thing. So I think you're on the cutting edge here, buddy, of, you know, making that promise happen. So as we go forward, and I do want to talk a little bit about the training, because I don't want to gloss over that, because as I just said, obviously, all of these considerations and the people that you're dealing with, or whatever. Let's talk about that real quick. Let's try and talk about, again, without giving away the secret sauce. What are the let's say major points we're trying to hit?
Yeah. So with the training, and as it currently stands, you know, it's a 2-day course, right? And 3 if we add swarming. But you know, you've got a full day of classroom work. And then there's a manual and a lot of, you know, smaller, the kind of off-the-shelf little toy drones that you can fly in class, specifically for indoor use. Like, just getting used to controllers and then learning that if you push this way, it goes the opposite direction. Like, understanding the basics of drones, of drone flight, if you will, and then really drilling down on what you're spraying and how that looks. And, like, we have to spray currently, because this doesn't, you know, drone labels don't exist for pesticides or any kind of chemicals.
Right.
So, and we're working with the big three on that, and we'll talk about the big three in a couple seconds. But really understanding that the labels that are presented for aerial crop dusters, that's what you're going to spray and what that looks like, and then how to quote your job based on that. And then you have a full day outside flying drones. I'm not saying doing tricks, but really learning how to map, learning how to integrate it with the shape file that you're getting from another imagery drone or some own farm derived, you know, image that the farmer may have, or his, you know, his CCA might provide you. Understanding how to incorporate that and really laying out your plan for the day to go out and execute, right? Understanding fairing distance, which a lot of people don't like to talk about, but like, the drone is going to run out of chemical and come back home and refill and then go back. And like, what makes that more efficient and how to look at those processes? That is a lot of what our training does, and I think it goes above and beyond some of the other training courses that you see online.
Right, and, you know, so you've got physical training, and then, you know, yeah, I'm sure you had to look high and low for a guy that's got some experience in the field.
Yeah. Yeah, we were.
Gene,
I would say that our two guys are. Go ahead, Patrick.
I was just going to say that was Gene's cue to jump in. Now we're almost out of time with the live show, but I think as usual we go long, so we can wrap up our subject, our topics here. But so Gene, you want to jump in here and tell us some of the ethos or?
Yeah, well, you know, we talk about the training side of it. You know, that's what I've kind of moved my career into. And as we started working with Austin Community College, and Rentizo contacted us and started looking at the, I hate using these buzzwords, like synergy of where they're going and where we're going, you know, it was a good fit. And because we're down here in balmy Texas, where in February you only get to, you know, 26 degrees, yeah, right. You know, one of the things that they have to comply to is the manufacturer's recommendation that you don't fly this thing under 32 degrees. Okay, so if you want to train people in the wintertime, you're not going to do it in Iowa because, Dudley, what's the temperature there today?
Feels like negative 10.
See? Okay. Not only would this thin-blooded Texan not want to stand out there in that, but you can't actually fly that drone because of manufacturer's restrictions. So, you know, it made a lot of sense for them to, you know, look at the southern region. And since Dudley is from, you know, a good southern boy from Mississippi, then it made sense. So they have to come in. They had a class this week, and the folks come in. They have to have their Part 107, you know, and because they're flying a commercial product under Part 137, they have to have a flight physical, Class 2 flight physical. They have to have their pesticide certifications, bumpity, 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 bump, and that's before they even walk into the classroom. So, you know, it's quite the process to go through, but, you know, as Dudley has alluded to so far, is that, you know, there's a demand for it. And one of the good things about drones in a farm situation is, unlike manned aviation, where you've got the Cessna Ag Wagon, you know, which is a gazillion dollars to begin with, it flies pretty much one speed real fast, and it covers a lot of territory, whereas they can custom design drones for different things in the farm, and it's going to be highly competitive from a cost standpoint. Is that not a true statement, Dudley?
It's a very much a true statement.
So, well, you know, from the practical standpoint, I mean, they're on point. And it looks like, to me anyway, that it's finally coming to of age where it's going to start on those odd-shaped and, you know, folks that have that low-per-acre cost, that drones are going to be the way to go.
Right. And, you know, my hat's off to you, Dudley, because you found somebody who, you know, this guy, Gene, spent a couple of days out in the field using drones. Day or two. No, you know, Gene's he's like my go-to guy for the field work. And, you know, it's funny, is I see so much, and you guys probably have learned this in the learning curve or whatever, there's so many people that are like, I'm sitting in an office somewhere and it's climate controlled, which is nice work if you can get it. And they, you know, the best laid plans of mice and man, and they're typing away with big smiles on their face. And then they get the program out in the field. And what usually happens, Gene?
Well, we get the guy that shows up with flip-flops and one battery, you know.
There's always one and you can spot them, you know.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And one of the things that I wanted, we touched on it, we talked about the data, but you can collect so much data, and I've said this for years, you got to have somebody that can interpret that data. And
oh,
I think this is one of the, this is part of the Rantizo model. They're going to go out there, they're going to do the research to interpret the data, be able to collect it and interpret the data at the same time, and look at softwares. We've been talking about software and, you know, multispectral imagery and near infrared, NDVI. I mean, all of this stuff is just, you know, pushing all my buttons as we go through this. And they provide that to the farmer, and the farmer can farm, and the data is interpreted for them. So,
well, that's
pretty cool.
Yeah, that's another point, too, with the, you know, at the early days with farm drones, and it really translates to everything. As much as you go out and you talk to someone like a farmer who's an expert in farming. And, you know, usually they can sniff out a faker pretty early. Hopefully the earlier the better. There's like one time, remember I gave that presentation of your material for some firefighters. And I forget exactly where that was. Might have been some people.
Oh, yeah, that was the 2015 flood, yeah.
And, there was some firefighters. And there were firefighters in the room. And I go, you know, and I prefaced the whole thing. And I said, look, you know, this is another person's material. I'm just giving the presentation. I'm not a firefighter, blah, blah, blah. So we're going through the slides. And these guys in the back room are giving me that stink face, you know, with the smirks on their face. And they're like, yeah, no, that's not, you're not. And I go, hey, man, you know, they were sniffing me out that I wasn't a firefighter. But I'm like, I told you up front in the beginning that I'm not a firefighter. And I'm not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes here, you know. But that is one of the things with this drone business is people sniff out someone who's, let's say, not well-rounded in the field they're trying to represent. And And, you know, so deadly. I mean, when you talk to people and you go out to the farmers, and I mean, there's already been kind of the first wave of, the drone guy has been out there. Do you run into any of that? Do you, like, you run into some skepticism, or do people feel comfortable when you guys come out? How's it working?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. I would say the skepticism primarily is around, well, are you going to spray just as efficiently or effectively as my ground rig or a crop duster? So then we have to present, you know, the white papers that exist, the data that we have that says that, you know, there's no statistical difference, you know, all the trials that we've done. Okay, so that's one component. The other one is like, well, you're getting 18 acres to the hour. My ground rig gets 100 and the crop duster gets 200. So how can you compete? And then you really, you know, hone in. I'm like, well, that ground rig could be more efficient and cover more acres in a timelier fashion if you incorporated this. And you just, it's a longer sales process, but you can eventually show them where those results and, you know, lie, and how they can really chip away and make their whole program more efficient, whether you're at the ag retail level or the farmer that's buying the services.
All right. Well,
I will say this, though, Patrick. It's not just the drones. It's the influx of all of the ag tech that's come on their farm in the last, say, 10 years, and that has the farmer skeptical.
All right. Well, and drones have always, that's been another thing. You know, when people were talking about the, the $82 billion industry of drones or whatever. And I think that, I don't want to speak for Gene, but early on, I think, you know, we've kind of learned that drones really augment existing businesses. It's like the other.
Yes. Yeah.
The tool in the toolbox, you know, can't build a house with just a hammer, you know, so you're going to need tools.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would seem like that all of this is starting to, what you're saying is that this is starting to play out. People, and I guess, you know, business is growing. So what you're saying is true. There's truth to it and whatnot. But, you know, we're running long. So why don't we do this? Could you give us the website where folks could get more information?
Yeah, just go to rantizo.com, rantizo.com.
Okay. And, you know, we're going to learn more. And I guess we're probably going to, you know, have to have you back at some point, because, you know, there there were so many branches of this that we could have went down the road and really expanded. I really wanted to expand on a couple of these points. We just don't. 45 minutes goes quick. So, in kind of closing or putting a bow on this, we covered a lot of real estate. You know, was there anything that we missed that you think is kind of would put a bow on this thing?
Yeah, I think one of the things that need to be understood is that we didn't really touch base on the big three, and that's Bayer, Corteva, and Syngenta, and they're the ones that provide the crop inputs. To some extent, BASF as well. I don't want to leave them out. We'll call them the big four. And we have buy-in from them. We're doing trials with them. And so that shows that they understand – not only from a trialing perspective, but this will take off. Those companies are all working on, you know, ultra-low volumes or new labels for drones because they understand that at some point the government regulations or the sustainability initiatives that are out there or just the end consumer is going to say, we want less chemicals used on our crops. We want less water used on our crops, which end up in the food chain. And I think we're here to at least attack a portion of that and really help out.
Well, you know, as I kind of thought or said in the beginning, I thought I was going to learn something. I think we did learn some things. And I'm also kind of glad that some of the concepts that both me and Gene and I shared many years ago are starting to come to, let's say, being a norm, it's exciting. And the technology, I really believe that this technology, and being kind of an advocate for it, that this technology could really, one of the good uses was in one of the world's oldest professions to help feed a hungry world. It sounds like this is starting to pan out. So with that, We will have to have you back, Dudley. Interesting stuff. And as this starts to really pick up a head of steam, I'm interested in hearing more. So thank you for being on, Gene. As always, you know, the expertise
yes,
you have is good. I like it. So till next time, everyone, keep it safe and see you then.
Be warm.
All right. Bye-bye. Sounds good.